behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Ben, we are back, and it seems like it's been a long time since we've been in the studio. I mean, just a little bit of inside baseball here. You know, we, not really that much inside, I guess, but, you know, we record in advance when things like vacations come up and stuff like that. And
right.
Illnesses or whatever. We try to have a few in the can, I guess.
Uh-huh.
It's been a while since we've been in the studio, but I'm excited about this topic because I think it's one that's going to cause a lot of, well, you know what? Maybe not. I think we're kind of on the same side of the fence on this one, but there's a little bit of back and forth about this. Some pros, some cons, and no matter where you look about this topic, you're going to find someone that says they love it, or someone says they really just think that this is not going to work.
Right. So let's start at the basics here. Indiegogo, for anyone who's not familiar with that, is a crowdfunding website, and it's got some competitors, you know, like Kickstarter, etc. The gist of these websites is this. You can go on to Indiegogo or Kickstarter and you can say, hey, I have this amazing idea and I need X amount of money mm-hmm. to make this idea a real thing. And sometimes it has middling results. Sometimes people aren't behind it. Sometimes, every once in a while, they get fantastic results and a team of people recently raised over $2 million on Indiegogo alone for the idea of turning all the roads in the United States into solar roadways.
Mm-hmm. Solar roadways. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a lot we have to talk about this. Now that's a very powerful tool to raise money for something like
sure,
for
yeah.
a program like this.
Yeah.
Their initial goal was only $1 million, and I say only. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it turns out that to date, 46,245 people have contributed to this cause. That means these people truly believe in it enough to put some money behind it and say, mm-hmm. I really want to see this program go through to completion. I want something to happen with this.
Private individuals, too.
That's right. And you know what? Before we get too deep into this, and I know we just started, but I want to mention that TechStuff has also recorded an episode on solar roadways, and
okay.
they're going to have a different angle to the whole thing. I know I talked yesterday with Jonathan and Lauren about what they had discussed and some of the things that, you know, they had mentioned that we were going to discuss. So, you know, I've got the inside scoop on what we need to cover because we'll have different approaches to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worthwhile to listen to both podcasts, I believe. Again, that's Tech Stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, check them out for a different, a little more, well, tech heavy, version of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to cover mostly, you know, what they are, I guess, and then some of the driving issues with it and some of the positives as well.
Okay.
So, yeah okay.
That sounds fantastic. So, first things first, a couple people probably checked their ears, grabbed a Q-tip or something when we said turn every roadway in the United States into essentially a big solar panel,
mm-hmm.
right? 'Cause right now, the vast majority of the world's roadways in developed countries use asphalt. Asphalt is a pretty old technology, but we keep fixing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also remarkably cheap.
Well, we use things like asphalt. We also use concrete.
Right.
We use gravel,
mm-hmm.
dirt,
mm-hmm.
things that, you know, you wouldn't think twice about driving a car over.
Right, yeah. They can take a beating, and it's not a rare earth metal situation.
Yeah,
you know
because,
what I mean?
Because I think, when I think of solar panels, and that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about, you know, making the road surface, all road surfaces, all parking lots everywhere. We'll get to it in just a minute, you know, the applications of this.
Right.
But we're talking about a glass surface that you're driving on. I think, when I think of solar panels, I think of a very delicate surface.
Absolutely.
I think of something that is easily broken, almost like, mm-hmm. Almost untouchable.
Right.
You know, I know you put them on your house, but you pretty much leave them alone. If a tree branch falls on it, that panel is done for. You have to replace that panel, right?
Yeah, if the wrong bird poops on it.
Yeah, that's a good point, Ben. I mean, there's all kinds of factors. You know, I mean, animal damage, squirrel damage, you know, whatever you
right.
want to say, you know, when it's on your rooftop, or hail damage, that could be disastrous for somebody with solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about driving a car
right.
on a what I consider a delicate surface, but that's not exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So these solar roadway proposals, let's go ahead and let's do this if you're cool with it, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Let's map out what these actually are, right?
Sure.
And then let's also talk a little bit about the people who started it, and then let's go to the pros before we go to the cons.
Absolutely. I love that idea. So, so let's see. Who developed this whole thing? It was developed by, Scott and Julie Broussa.
Mm-hmm. And they're
husband and wife. They're out of, is it Sagal, Idaho?
Yeah, they're out of Sagal, Idaho.
Idaho in the United States.
Yeah. And, they've got a very endearing backstory. They met when they were about 3 or 4 years old, right?
Who doesn't love a story like that?
Who doesn't love a story like
that? You'd have to have a cold, cold heart, man.
Yeah, and they've been working on this concept for a while. Now, people will notice that earlier, Scott, you and I talked about how many folks had donated, private individuals had donated to the Indiegogo, but why do we say private individuals specifically? Well, that's because Solar Roadways also received funding from the U.S. Federal Highway Administration for R&D.
Yeah, that's right. And they're I think they've already completed one contract, and they're on to a second contract. Isn't that right?
Right.
There's phase two, I guess, of this whole thing.
Right, yeah. Phase one is sort of a proof of concept, so they build a they build a small section of what the prototype pavement would look like. Mm-hmm. And in their Indiegogo campaign, you can see them drive a tractor a short distance across it. The phase two, I believe, is to build an entire prototype parking lot.
Oh, not bad. That's a great project. And you know what? Later, I want to talk specifically about parking lots because I think that has great potential.
That's a really good point. So in so what they've been doing here so far with their surface, it's glass. They've been testing for traction, load testing, impact resistance. And they maintain that this has surpassed all of the requirements, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Each one of these things is, believe it or not, each one of them has a microprocessor contained within the panel. It's a hexagon shaped panel.
Right.
And so it's like a tile. It's almost as if you were tiling the road with these hexagon shapes.
Yeah. Imagine like a cobblestone. But, as far as the idea of a tiled road, most people are familiar with tiled roads in the form of cobblestones.
Correct. Yeah, that's
but
right.
This would be different because the surface is, what's a good word for it? The surface of each hexagon is kind of beveled slightly, and it makes a much smoother surface despite that beveling than asphalt.
Okay, I understand. I get it. So there's a lot of seams.
Yeah.
However, when they come together, they come together very tightly. They're all linked together. All these microprocessors are linked together.
Right.
And I'm sure that TechStuff has covered exactly the communication between all of these things and how they work. But it also has embedded LEDs. That's one thing we need to mention.
Yep.
It's not a smooth, slick glass surface like what you think. It has a texture to it.
Yep.
It also has a, and I'm going to say more than just a simple like texture. It's not like a grooved pattern or something.
No,
it has
dots.
Yeah, raised areas, like raised dots. And that's something that I want to talk about later, maybe in the cons section if you want.
Absolutely.
But all that plays into traction because they're really working on traction. They're working on load testing you mentioned. Now, I think the load testing thing, now, a lot of people are going to be initially concerned, as I was.
Right.
Well, there's several concerns I have, and my initial thought was, wait a minute, you're going to be driving on glass, first of all.
Right, which is a notoriously soft material.
Exactly right.
You can break it with your hands.
Exactly. And then, you know, the load, you know, as far as being able to withstand something, I mean, glass, I mean, you can't put a whole lot of weight on glass, but
right.
they've tested these things up to 250,000 pounds.
Right, that's four times the weight of a semi-truck.
Yeah, they've exceeded that because, and they started out low, I think they started out at like 80,000 pounds is what they initially were shooting for, and then some trucker friend of theirs said, you know, on the back roads when there's no scales around, you know, on these logging roads or whatever, sometimes it fully loaded, I'm at like 125,000 pounds. So they said, well, let's up it to 150,000. And they
right.
said, well, just to be sure, you know, we're finding out more and more about the trucking industry. Let's up that. So now they're shooting for 250,000 pounds that these panels are able to withstand.
Right. And they're also experimenting with this is something we're going to talk about as well with when we get to their texture patterns. Mm-hmm. I think you and I are heading toward the same thing.
Sure.
They've done experiments. Another thing you would be worried about driving on glass, you'd say, well, if the glass doesn't immediately shatter under the weight of a semi-truck or, heck, even a really low-weight car like a Miata or something,
mm-hmm.
then our next concern would be friction. How do you stop on this glass, especially if it's raining?
And I think some of that comes back to the texture. I think some of that, that's part of what those raised bumps are for. I think that the glass itself isn't slick like what we think of as a typical solar panel.
Right. Yeah. They also, the solar panels, these are double layered laminated glass. So the solar panel is actually not the surface that they're driving
it's
on.
Not exposed, it's below this, this ultra heavy duty glass that
like a dermis and an epidermis
exactly
but one thing about that, they say that their experiments they conducted indicated that a car moving at 80 miles per hour over solar roadway panels can slam on the brakes without skidding. Scott, I'm just going to leave that there till we come back on that one. Their experiment indicated that.
I see. Okay, gotcha. So I'll keep that in mind. Now, you remember we mentioned that each panel has its own microprocessor.
Yes, sir.
And they communicate with surrounding panels, and they kind of monitor each other for malfunctions, any kind of problem that would happen. And the idea is that with this microprocessor and the communication between them, you're able to control them. You know, remember I mentioned the LEDs in the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you're able to configure the way the LEDs light
which is really cool.
That is really cool. You're able to configure the lighting in each panel individually to work together with the panels all around it. So you're able to change lanes at will. You know, you're able to change lane designations, I guess, at will.
Uh-huh.
And surface indicators. So, you need an additional lane coming in or out of a busy metro area at one time.
Yeah.
You're able to do that electronically on the road surface rather than having the overhead, directional indicators that we have now. You know, like the lanes that, I don't know if they have them in the area that you live in, Ben, but one area that I live in has overhead indicators where, the center turn lane, which is normally a center turn lane, rather.
Sure.
At certain times of the day, at rush hour to get into the city, they have two lanes going in and one lane coming out, and then it reverses coming back. So it's a reversible lane, and we call the middle lane the suicide lane.
I was going to say, we call it the suicide lane.
Oh, so you do have these. Yeah,
we have one.
Sure, of course. And I think everybody just driving around, major cities has seen something like this, or even smaller cities, but you're able to do this electronically on the road surface at this point with these panels in place. That's the plan anyways.
Right, yes. And also, I guess now we can sort of transition into the big picture and the
where they can be installed. Is that okay?
Ah, yes, perfect.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it's perfect.
I did not mean to jump over what we were planning there, but we've talked about road surfaces and we briefly mentioned parking lots.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of other uses for these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of them maybe?
Well, that's a fantastic question. You can notice this when you look at any paved surface you can imagine. So also private compounds like farms and stuff. Mm-hmm. This could work for a farm. If we're talking about these ideas, essentially are highly durable solar panels, right?
Mm-hmm.
That have some patterns you can put on them. So they would be perfect for airport runways if the technology is there.
And that is one thing that they're talking about. They're also talking about driveways, sidewalks, bike paths.
Sidewalks and bike paths.
Playgrounds.
Yeah.
And the playground thing is kind of interesting because in the video, I believe, they showed a basketball court.
Yeah.
And the basketball court, as you can imagine with the LEDs, they could light up the boundaries for the court. They set up the lines for the court, for the game. You could change that over to a tennis court.
Mm-hmm.
and add a removable net. The exact same surface is what I'm talking about. And then you could change that another time to set up a hopscotch, area for the kids, or a four square, or any other game that, kids normally draw on the pavement with chalk and make their own outlines or use the existing lines in the pavement. They could configure the pavement for whatever game or application they want at that time.
Right, yes, and also the generation of electricity. That's something we haven't talked about yet.
And that's the whole crux of this thing, right? Because,
right.
You're thinking, why would anybody want to put this on their farm? Why would anybody want to put this on their own private property?
Right.
Why would you want to have a driveway that is the solar panel? Because the concrete works fine, or asphalt, or whatever you happen to have.
Sure.
Why would I want to change? Well, the idea is this electrical generation.
Right, yeah. So the U.S. Census Bureau estimates that installing solar panels on every home in the states would produce, check this out, Scott, 3.75 trillion kilowatt hours of electricity a year. So that's almost as much energy as the entire United States generated in 2011.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Now, of course, when we hear pie in the sky, utopian things like that, That sounds like a lot of energy. It doesn't factor in the enormous cost of putting a solar panel on every house.
Pie in the sky utopian. I didn't mean to cut you off there at the end, but pie in the sky utopian ideas. That's what we're kind of getting towards here near the end. I do want to talk about that as well. I mean, we're getting a long list of what we want to cover. but generating this electricity, it can power homes, it can power businesses, and even cars eventually, because, you know, they're talking about these connected driveways and parking lots and things like that. Now, imagine if you had a parking lot that was covered in, these solar panels and you offered EV parking for your customers.
Right, and you could charge while you're shopping or watching a movie or whatever.
That's right, and the system would provide the power. You know, the parking lot surface itself would provide the power for the EV generation, you know, for the meters or the devices that charge the electric vehicles in, let's say, the mall parking lot for the day. All right, so, you know, the idea is that, you know, with these surfaces that can be configurable, you could also maybe adapt the parking lot for the current needs. Like if you needed more parking spaces, you could take an area that is normally a little bit wider open during the rest of the year. Uh-huh. You could make it a little bit more packed, I guess, if you were to add parking spaces during peak shopping times, like, you know, during the holidays or weekends versus, you know, weekdays. Mm-hmm. You can configure all this. You can, I know in the video, there's, I got a little bit of a problem with this, but, you know, they can adjust the number of handicap parking spots.
Right, and by changing the LED.
Exactly. So let's say that, you know, three people that legitimately need handicap parking, you know, park in that area and there's no more left, and then someone comes in that needs it, requires a handicap parking area. Then they could add one automatically if necessary, but there'd be like an infrastructure issue with that. You'd have to know that that person would require it.
Right, yes. But the idea here, the potential benefits are fantastic. And Scott, let's just laundry list some of the pros.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'll go ahead and kick it off. Number one, to me, this is one of the most important things, is the potential for a decentralized power grid. So in that parking lot example, one thing that's fantastic about this is that these solar panels would be generating electricity, and that would be going directly to an electric car that was parked and charging. Mm-hmm. So there's no, there are none of the load problems that we would encounter in a centralized power grid.
All right, and here's one that dovetails along with this one. It also has an attached cable corridor. And this cable corridor, which runs right, you know, next to the road, below the road surface, so you never see this thing, is for cables and communication hardware on one side. And then I think there's another side. I don't think that these are on the same side, Ben, but there's another side that handles stormwater collection and treatment, which I found pretty amazing. Now this also is like a movement system, so, you know, the wastewater movement system, so it can channel water into different areas that need it or require it. It almost works like a modern sewer, I guess, in that way.
That's cool.
So if one area, you know, overflows or has, you know, a lot of rain, excessive amount of rain, and it finds that it's beginning to flood one certain area, it can channel off into another region. They can control where this goes via gates and things like that, you know, waste gates.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing also contains all of the wiring. Everything is underground. There's nothing overhead that's required. Eventually, I think they would have to go overhead.
Sure.
But, you know, for the most part, the side of the roadway would be clean.
And another tremendous advantage here is that these panels themselves, these hexagons, are relatively independent. When you look at the way it functions, it's just a connected network. So if one of them messes up, they weigh about 110 pounds each. You can just pop it off, in theory, hook it up with some other connections, and then boom, you're good to go.
Wow, you saw me raise my eyebrows there, because 110 pounds each? These panels don't look all that big when I see them. That's amazing. They must be really, really dense with material. I bet that glass is super heavy.
I think part of it is, just to be able to bear the load.
Yeah, but that really is a fantastic idea and I think of this as, here's a simple example, Ben.
Yeah.
Do you ever see, carpet tile squares?
Yes.
I think that's the way you say it, right? Carpet tile squares.
Uh-huh.
If you spill something or you have pet or whatever has an accident on it, you pull up that tile, you clean that one tile, and then you replace that tile. You don't have to clean or treat the whole floor. You know, if it has to be replaced, it has to be replaced because of damage or whatever. But, but it's a very simple system, and it's almost the exact same way. You just pull up the damaged part, the bad part, and replace it with a good one, a brand new one.
Right, which is why those carpet tiles are so popular in institutions like schools, hospitals, other retirement homes.
Airports, all kinds of places. You'll find them everywhere. And the same idea is being applied to the roadway. And they said that, you know, let's say that there is a damaged area. It can be replaced, you know, individually like we talked about. And it can guide the, you know, the people that are replacing them right to the damaged one. You know, it's like it'll give it a grid system to figure out exactly which panel is malfunctioning. And they can be replaced quickly, easily.
Yeah. It'll triangulate.
Yeah, exactly right. And it makes sense. So, and I guess you wouldn't have to deal with the whole pothole issue. I mean, because you're not going to have a pothole in a glass area. I mean, if there is one that's broken for whatever reason, it can be just pulled up and replaced. It's not like a pothole that you patch and then becomes a rough area.
I see what you're saying, Scott, but I will say inconvenience is like true love. It finds a way. You know what I mean?
Good point.
The inventors of the solar roadway maintain that despite the cost, which we'll talk about in a bit, the systems themselves can pay for their cost over the course of a little more than two decades, 22 years. Now that you and I have, and we should also point out, they're all, Scott and Julie Broussard are also, they already have four customers that are coming up to actually buy these things in Idaho. They've also laid out, some prototypes in Idaho, including one at a welcome center.
And one more thing, Ben, that I'd like to add to this is that, you know, we've been talking about, you know, the surface being glass, of course, and being, you know, this very, not slick, but, you know, textured surface, and a lot of people would think, you know, okay, that's maybe gonna work okay if I've got dry tires on a dry day. What about when it's raining or even snowing or if there's ice on the road? That's gonna be even more difficult because who wants to drive on wet glass?
Right.
I mean, there's, can you imagine the difficulties with that? Well, you know, the thing is snow and ice could add even further complications. And they've thought about this. They've put in heating elements into each individual panel. So. I guess it removes any kind of snow and ice buildup on the panels, and they've actually demonstrated this because, you know, they're from Idaho, and they're able to test this on their own property. They said, you know, here's, I think in the video they showed, you know, one set of panels that had it activated and one set that was not activated, and there was buildup on the one that wasn't, and the one that, you know, they did have it activated on, it was perfectly clean and clear. I mean, it may have been damp, I guess, but, you know, that's going to happen in the rain anyways.
Yes, and for anyone who is listening outside of the United States, they have plenty of opportunities to check for that kind of weather in Idaho.
Yeah, that is a rough. That's a rough area to be testing something like this in. So you know they know that it's going to work.
Yes, and we're going to talk now about a few of the possible cons. We've done a lot of pros, and you guys can already tell that both Scott and myself have quite a few things to say about the possible downsides. We're a bit skeptical, you and I.
I'd like something like this to exist. Yes, I understand that, you know, there's some pros to this thing, and I will get to that, but I don't want it to sound like we're completely against it, because I think there's some applications for this whole thing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Is that okay? I mean, like,
yeah,
more like
totally.
A balance, I think. You know, that you know, there's some pros, but the cons, for me, far outweigh the pros.
Well, as you said, it all goes back to application. I think it depends upon where this is deployed. So in 2002, you know, their story dates back well. They got their Fed funding in 2009. In 2010, the company assumed that a 12 by 12 inch glass panel would cost around $10,000. So at that rate, using that number, covering all the roads would cost, you ready? $56 trillion.
Oh my gosh.
US. That's 20 times the annual federal budget.
Wait, one quick second. You said a 12 by 12 panel would cost $10,000?
Yeah.
So that's $10,000 per square foot.
Now, this is, again, yeah, exactly. Now, this again is, or per hexagonal.
Oh yeah. Okay. Per hexagonal foot. I don't know how you'd figure that.
Right. Yeah. I think part of that is a little deceptive because they were building these by hand.
Mm-hmm.
So once we hit economy of scale, that price probably drops.
Okay. Sure. So it's the same thing with cars. When, you know, a prototype car costs $4 million to build, but then when production comes around, it's much cheaper. I mean, as you build each individual vehicle, I mean, in the initial vehicle is the most expensive one. Is that right? Even in production, because, you know, you've just installed all of that factory, that machinery, everything that has to go into it.
Yeah.
And then that first panel is the most expensive. And then everyone after that, the price comes down as you make two, three, four, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000, et cetera.
Yeah, that's really a point. Those numbers, by the way, come to us from a writer named Brad Plumer over at The Vox. Hmm. Those are some hypothetical reckonings here from 2010. So again, that may have changed because that's 4 years later at this point. But one of my remaining cons here, however, is that for covering the entire U.S. roadway system at all, the cost is still going to be enormous.
Okay, I've been thinking about this since we've kind of decided that we were going to do this topic about a week ago.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about this as I drive in to work every day. I drive in about 15 or 16 miles. That's, you know, it depends on which way I go. And I've been looking at the road surface and just how much there is there. And then I've been trying to think, okay, per square foot, $10,000 per square foot, roughly. You know, ballpark. I mean, it could have come down by now, but still, that amount of price and just that amount of material that's required to cover that 16 miles that I drive every day to work. That's an enormous amount of tiles between here and there.
Yeah.
The undertaking of something like this would be so enormous. I mean, I know that it begins small. It begins with, you know, we'll do a sidewalk here, a bike path there.
Right.
Work on the parking, because they're talking about parking lots, which I think is a good idea, which we'll talk about. But
yeah.
I just look at the roadways themselves, and I think roadways are enormous. And when they cover them, you know, they cover them with liquid material that makes one solid sheet. It's pretty easy.
Yep.
This becomes like a giant tiling process,
a giant tiling project.
It's huge, yeah. And then to add the complexity of electronics to this, you know, that it all has to work together and everything has to be just exactly right. There's so much to this, Ben. I mean, it really starts to boggle your mind when you begin to think of everything that would have to happen in order to make a tiling project of this size work.
Yes, and let me just throw in a little bit of historical context here. This is something that a lot of people take for granted in the modern day, but the fact of the matter is that it's just astonishing that we have an interstate system to begin with. We have a podcast entirely on what made the Eisenhower interstate system happen and how close it was to not happening for a really long time.
Sure.
And that was just asphalt. So the idea of rolling out something that completely changes the surface of an entire infrastructure of this magnitude is difficult to really imagine. But I do want to point out that often with this kind of stuff, with these innovations, you start with really big plans,
mm-hmm.
right? And
sure.
then the real world steps on those, toward that big plan or overarching goal, those real world steps are by nature small.
Well, sure, so, of course. And when you hear, Scott and Julie talk about this road, Scott and Julie Broussa, hear them talk about it, you understand, like, they've got a lot of passion for this. They've got, you know, the desire to really, really change the world with what they're doing. I mean, that's the idea, is that, you know, they want to change this existing infrastructure. They really want to do something good. They want it to work. And then, you know, they've thought through a lot of the problems, and there's an FAQ section on the site that has, you know, plenty of questions that are answered, and they answer them well, I think. You know, the questions are answered appropriately, but they also neglect some things in these answers. You know, if you go through the FAQ, you can kind of pick that apart, and I guess that's true with anything, though. I mean,
sure.
You could pick anything apart. Any book that you read, any textbook, or, you know, any speech that somebody gives, or this podcast, or whatever you want to do.
Right.
You could pick, you know, flaws in that and say, yeah, that's not exactly how it works. You're neglecting this angle to the whole thing. And that's the thing, is like this couple, you know, they're working together with consultants, I'm sure. They're trying to cover every angle, but there's always going to be someone out there that says, but you didn't think about this. What about the slight amount of give that's in the surface of an asphalt road versus a glass road where there's no give at all? It's a completely solid surface. That's going to have some inherent problems with it.
Differential loading.
Exactly right, that they didn't think about. I mean, I know they thought of rolling resistance. I know they thought of, you know, the grip of tires. They thought about, you know, the way that the cars can stop on the surfaces. We'll talk about in a minute, because I know you want to discuss that. But what about, you know, that tiny little bit of give that asphalt has versus a glass surface? You know, where is that going to come from? And I know that you're going to say it's tiled, and the tiles slightly flex themselves. Well, that in itself has a problem because
right.
there's a rocking that happens with that, and it erodes the surface below it. And the surface below it is critical because once that starts to happen, the tiles begin to crack or break. And, you know, we can see it in any kind of like large tiles that you would lay out on a patio for say, you know, just for example, rather.
Right.
And, I've seen this myself. I've tried to lay out, tile patios that are large, you know, like, you know, foot and a half by foot and a half. And over time, they begin to rock a little bit. You know, the elements kind of break down the material below them. A little bit uneven and they start to snap.
Yeah.
Well, with cobblestones and smaller stones, that's not quite as much of an issue because they're small, they're compact, you almost have to see it in action to really understand, but there's a video that, I guess a skeptic video that shows you what happens when, over time, when a larger panel is rocked back and forth repeatedly as a road surface would be, it begins to pivot in the middle almost, and it
yeah.
flexes on either side, and then there's going to be a point where load is placed on both sides of that at one time, and it will break.
Scott, I'm so glad that you mentioned the video that I don't want to call it a debunking video, but it points out some of those flaws that you were talking about, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And funny story, that video is almost 30 minutes long in comparison to the 6 or 7 minute long Indiegogo video.
Yeah, well, because it takes parts of it. I mean, it shows you a segment of the video itself, you know, the promotional video,
sure.
I guess. And then it takes a few minutes to explain why what they just said isn't exactly accurate, or they haven't thought of this angle or that angle. As we just mentioned, you know, they're kind of
yeah.
picking it apart. And I think it's appropriate. And maybe, you know, who knows, Ben, there could be some constructive things that come out of this as well. It's not all meant to be destructive, I don't think. I think that,
right.
you know, Scott and Julie or the consultants or whoever is working on the solar roadway project overall can look at that and say, yeah, we didn't think of that. Let's begin to tackle that problem and we can make this work.
Well, here's one interesting thing, for instance, that I think could be some constructive criticism. And that goes down to, being able to see LED patterns during the daytime.
Oh, that was a good part of the video. I was pretty shocked by that whole thing because I thought, you know, LEDs are bright, of course, right?
Right.
We both know that. But,
yeah.
But seeing them in daylight, not so easy.
So, yeah, there's a part in the video where the narrator talks about the angle at which all of the LEDs are shown in the pro solar roadway video. And then he says, well, let's see what these look like when they're not in the shade. And it's very difficult to discern the lights at all, much less the color of those lights.
Yeah, he shows you the exact same LED or a similar set of LEDs in a strand, lights them up. It's easy to see, you know, red, blue, green, whatever the colors were. I don't remember. And then he brings them out in bright sunlight and changes the angle just a slight bit and turns them on again. You can't even tell that they're on, really. I mean, that's a difficult thing. And then I guess he says, well, what's going to happen when they're embedded below, you know, heavy layer of glass as well? And you've got,
yeah.
you know, sun glare and, you know, other things that add to this whole thing. Are you going to be able to even see the lines in the road? Is that going to be possible? Because you
right.
can't, because you can't paint lines on a system like this. It just
no.
doesn't work.
And another thing that opponents of this have brought out is that the panels themselves, the solar roadway itself, won't produce as much energy as conventional solar panels.
Ah, good point.
There's also plenty of other places in the United States where we have space to put solar panels, the maintenance loan we've covered. But one other thing I want to point out is that at this point, we don't have adequate technology to really store energy from solar panels.
Good point. That's
so,
right. Yeah,
I don't
so
know where we will put it.
How would you do that? I mean, you can. There's a point where you can sell it back to the grid, right? You can.
Right.
You can create your own at home, and you can if you use less than what you produce, you sell it back. And there's a way to do that. I'm not sure exactly how all that works.
Sure, that varies state by state.
You can do that. I understand that. But then, what if you know the system is creating so much energy, apparently, as they say,
right.
that the United States can't keep up with it, that, you know, we have too much power. What's going to happen then at that point?
Now, buy our juice, Canada.
I'm you know, smiling a little bit as
yeah.
I say this, but, you know, this is if this whole thing were to play out. If every surface were to be covered,
sure.
every road surface and solid walking surface and driving surface were to be covered with this, what happens when we produce so much power that, you know, we can't even deal with it? We have too much. What do you do with it? Do you sell it to Canada? Do you sell it to
yeah.
it to Mexico? Do you sell it overseas somehow? What does it become some type of commodity that you can trade? what do you do with it? I mean,
An embarrassment of riches.
I guess. I mean, we have to make Las Vegas bigger. What do we do?
Yeah, it's about time Vegas got a little bigger. It's not quite shiny enough.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think Vegas is big enough, Ben. We have to make it somehow more gaudy, I guess, right?
Yeah, a little more ostentatious. Yeah.
Much more neon is what we need.
And that's the thing that gets me about Vegas. It's just a little bit too quiet,
yeah.
You know, visually.
Yeah, that's right. So, not enough going on there.
Not enough. So we're, okay, now we know that it may sound that as though we are just kicking this idea up and down the street.
And I've got a couple more, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
Because I know you want to kind of wrap it with maybe like a little positive spin.
Right.
You always like to do that. I do too.
Yeah.
But I do have a few more that I feel like I have to just get out there.
So, okay.
And
lay them on me.
And it kind of comes from, you know, some of the feedback in the forums, and it comes from, you know, the skeptic sites and places like that. And it's just things that I want you to know, that I guess you, the listener, to know that we know about that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's
you know,
true.
So that we're thinking about all this stuff, and it's all part of the big picture. But traction in the snow and rain, we kind of talked about that.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Now, the traction thing is big. Now, we talked about the give in the asphalt versus the the glass.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I almost forgot that.
What's that?
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that, Scott, because this is one of my biggest issues. I'm interrupting you.
That's all right.
Is it okay?
No, I'm excited because you're excited.
I feel very strongly about this one, buddy. So I said earlier that their experiments indicated that a car going 80 miles an hour could stop with no problem.
Yes.
They didn't take a car on this surface because there's not enough of a build out yet to get a car to 80 miles an hour.
The test surface looks like it's about 20 feet long.
Right.
And it's beside a barn on their own private property. So you can't really drive a car and stop it at 80 miles an hour on that surface.
Right. So what they did instead was an experiment on the
It's a device, right?
It's
a device that swings a pendulum that has what looks like a shoe on it almost.
Yeah.
It's not a shoe. It's some type of device that simulates a tire.
Yeah, it's a rubber boot. It's the kind of thing that civil engineers use to test for road friction. So I want to be fair when I say that this is a test that people conventionally do to check for road friction.
Sure.
So it's not something made up.
No, they could put a slab of concrete there that's intended to be, the road surface or asphalt, but they just happen to use they're also using this glass surface in the same way.
And the thing about this sort of testing is that when you move from the laboratory or from the testing area to the real world, instantly, dozens of things that you never thought would happen.
What about that car in front of you that's leaking oil?
Great point.
Or transmission fluid or coolant or any of those that add, you know, a bit of slickness to the road surface that you wouldn't normally have. Or, you know, like, let's say a little bit of rain, they can test for water, stuff like that.
Right.
I know they can add these elements to the test surface, but the one that they tested in the lab, it looked to me like it was bone dry.
Yeah.
It appeared to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, we've talked about wet glass and the problems with driving on wet glass. And, you know, it does have these traction surfaces built in, you know, little raised areas and everything. But it seems like that would wear down as well, right?
Yeah, it does. And what about hilly areas? What about areas that have steep inclines?
You know what, Ben? Out of all the, you know, the whole time I've been thinking about this, I've been considering flat surfaces. I don't know why I wasn't thinking, what about when you're in the mountains? Because I was just recently on a road trip I guess it would be in Tennessee, Kentucky area, 6% grade.
Wow.
With semis all around me,
you know,
it's pretty steep. It's
pretty
steep. I mean, you have to lower gear and you don't want to touch your brakes, that kind of thing. What happens on that, on glass, when it's maybe, you know, raining or possibly even snowing? Because they get snow in the mountains sometimes.
Mm.
So what happens then?
Yeah, the weirdest thing I thought of, the most difficult, hypothetical, implausible thing that I thought of that could happen to this road was, what if it was struck by lightning?
Oh, good point.
Because then it would severely damage the surface, right?
Sure.
And it would also completely screw over the power grid.
Now, see, I'm glad we're talking because I never thought of a lightning strike either.
Well, it's such a terrible lottery to win, you know, and it's also not very likely for that to happen.
Sure.
But if it did occur, it would be bad news all the way around.
Yeah. Okay. So we there's more to it than just this stuff. I mean, we're still talking about some of the cons before we get to kind of a little positive spin,
But
we talked about tiles, we talked about asphalt, and you know how it has give, a little bit of give that's beneficial and adds to rolling resistance, which
sure.
You really need some rolling resistance.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, we'd have rock hard tires on every vehicle. And, you know, there'd be no give in anything, and it would be very difficult to stop. But, you know, that helps a tiny, tiny little bit, and it's important.
Oh, and we also pointed out the cost, which again, to be fair, can change once it hits economy of scale.
Exactly right. Now that we talked about the changing LED patterns and the LEDs and how they may be an issue to read during different conditions, you know, different angles of view, that type of thing, that may be an issue as well. Also, you know, we haven't talked about the couple themselves. Now, he's got a lot of engineering experience.
He's an electrical engineer.
He's an electrical engineer, like 20 plus years of engineering experience. She is a private, a private consultant of some kind?
I believe so.
Hang on one second. She is a private practice counselor.
That's right.
All right, so that's fine. He's gone to things like these TED Talks and, you know, tried to generate some energy for this whole thing. But even they themselves, they have stated they have no marketing skills. They've never built anything.
Right.
Which really you can't really hold that against them, but it's just one more thing that the skeptics like to say. Wait a minute here. There's a couple that they're trying to change the entire infrastructure of the United States. Really, I mean, that's really, or an infrastructure within the United States. And they've never sold anything. They have no marketing skills. They have really just this, as you said, pie in the sky idea. And we're supposed to get behind this thing and see if it works. It's really got to be played out in the marketplace. We got to see how this works on a smaller scale, I think, before they go as big as they're saying they want to go with it.
Ah, okay. So you just threw a lifeline there. Smaller scale.
Smaller scale. Yeah, that's right.
What I think you and I both mean by this, and stop me if I'm wrong, Scott, is that this technology has some fantastic promise. Maybe not in the roadways of the United States entire, but this could be a fantastic thing for parking lots, especially the ability to change, which you already talked about, the ability to change handicap spots.
Sure.
And modify space for parking. This could really work in a way, you know, whenever I hear these ideas, I start combining them with other projects, you know, like Audi has that rigged up parking lot to let your car park for you, and then add some solar panels to the roadway for
that. It's almost like a driverless valet for the Audi system, and combine the two, that'd be pretty impressive. Now, you may think that, you know, in a parking lot, most of the surface is covered all the time, right? But some of the overhead shots that they've got, you know, these aerial photography shots that are on the site, it shows you that even a full parking lot, there's a lot of exposed area in a full parking lot.
Sure, yeah, all the lanes to drive to and from a space.
You would be surprised by how much open area there still is in what's considered a full parking lot. And I mean, you know, when there's less cars there, all the better. You know, it's still just gathering up more energy. And I agree, you know, that this is maybe something that's best left in the parking lots for now. You know, just to try to, you know, maybe give this a shot. I think that it would almost be a novelty. For a place, you know, that, let's say that we've got a solar parking lot. You can charge your EV for free when you park here. You know, it's right in downtown Atlanta or downtown Chicago or wherever it happens
Epcot
to be.
Center.
That's right. What about Disney World? You know, a place like that with an enormous parking lot. And can you imagine how many EVs are there any given day? There's probably quite a few.
Yeah.
And I would think that if they offered free parking for anybody with an EV vehicle versus, I don't know, what has it been to park there? $225 a day? Something like that? I think it's 225 or 235 the last time I was there to park for an hour or two.
To park?
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But it's expensive to park.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would think that if they offered free parking for EV vehicles, for the whole day, and they could charge for free, that's kind of a nice novelty thing.
Provides an incentive.
It would. And I think that businesses could capitalize on that as well. And, you know, one little con, I guess, in this, if I can just throw it in there. They're talking about selling ad space on these panels, and they said that parking lots may be an area to do that.
Oh yeah,
and because they wouldn't want to do it on roadways, I wouldn't think. Maybe they would. Who knows? Because you never know. But you know, with the configurable or reconfigurable LEDs, they could create any logo they want on any surface they want. So this could be the Coca-Cola parking lot. This could be the Home Depot parking lot, or, you know, whatever, sponsored by whatever.
I mean, can't you already see the potential for pranks and then wonderful things? That's where I instantly go. Yeah.
Hackers, sure. That'd be kind of fun, right?
It would be fun. I'm sure that if these parking lots exist, and there's going to be somebody who proposes through one.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just brainstorming different things you could do with those LEDs. I gotta be honest, Scott. I want these to happen. I don't know if the roadway makes sense, but maybe that's just because we don't have the technology there yet, or the cost of the technology. But for parking lots, this would be great. For sidewalks, they'd be even better.
Okay, parking lots, I understand. Sidewalks, I understand. And they have relatively low wear. So we're talking about them wearing out, and speeds on them would be very, very slow. And so you wouldn't have to worry so much about the traction issue as we're talking about, because you and I both know that there are people driving 90, 95 miles an hour on the highways all the time.
Yeah.
What about motorcycles? What about motorcycles in the rain on glass? How's that?
Yeah, that's what about car accidents that occur? That's another big thing we haven't really talked about.
A semi that tips over and cracks, you know, 200 panels at a time at the cost of $10,000 a panel. Who's responsible for the price of that? Is that the trucking company, or is that the road commission? Who's going to pay for that type of thing? And what about one other thing that we haven't thought about on the roadways, Ben? And this is the last negative thing that I really want to talk about, because I know we said we were going to end on a pro. Kind of did, but I was just thinking about this last night, you know, when I was talking with Jonathan and Lauren. What about the noise? What about, you know, have you ever gone over rumble strips on the highway?
Yeah.
Now I see the textured glass that has to be there. You know, you can't have a smooth surface.
Uh-huh.
It has to be textured in some way. It has to have those bumps. Imagine driving on those at 80 miles an hour continuously for, let's say, a 5-hour road trip or whatever you're doing. That's going to be exhausting for the driver. It's going to be loud. The people near it, you know, anywhere near the highway who live near there,
sure,
that noise is going to be deafening. Well, that's why they put up, you know, rows of trees and walls and things like that, you know, because of grooved pavement and things. So this exceeds the grooved pavement thing. This is bigger. If you look at the glass panels in these videos that you can go check out on Solar Roadways, you're going to see that those bumps are pretty significant. You know, that's going to create a lot of noise, I think, a lot of road noise. And what about car manufacturers? How are they going to accommodate this? Because right now, I mean, I've got an older car, but it's really loud inside. It's the point where I can almost not use a cell phone, or, you know, it's hard to talk to somebody in the same vehicle. It's loud. Newer cars, I know, are a lot quieter, but when you put them on a surface like this, I don't know, man. It's going to be like the equivalent of, you know, mowing the grass, you know, with the lawnmower in front of you all day long. It's going to be super loud.
So with all of these concerns and with all of the potential for this, it's time for you and I to make the call. I would like to see this on sidewalks yesterday, powering streetlights, you know, maybe even giving a couple of EV parking spaces. I'd like to see it in a parking lot somewhere if it happens, but at this point I think there's a way to we have quite a stretch in terms of both technology and the cost of that technology before we see this on roadways.
You know, Ben, you made a good point. What about powering the streetlights within a neighborhood? If you had a neighborhood that was paved with this, because the speed limits are supposedly 25 miles an hour in neighborhoods anyways.
Sure.
That's relatively low. You know, another thing with the textured, I guess, you know, boy, I keep coming up with more.
Yeah.
What if there is snow on the surface? I know it's supposed to be kept away with the heating element, but let's say that they malfunction for whatever reason. Clearing snow would have to be done with a brush or a similar device. It couldn't be done with a plow as it normally would be, because it would just tear up the surface. But I don't even know if that's a factor. Maybe it's not. But what about, you know, the playgrounds and things like that? That's a great use for it. I mean, surfaces that are normally hard to begin with. I know that playgrounds are going towards a soft surface, but you know, like a basketball court or tennis court.
Yeah.
All of that is a great application. A tennis court, I don't know, would the texture work, you know, with something that, that's the thing. I didn't think about texture for sports that require a ball bouncing.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I guess, well, you know, my guess would be that you add another layer that allows for bounce.
As the more I think about this, the more we talk about it, I've got other things. What about skateboarders, Ben? Is this going to be the end of skateboarding? Because it's going to be a rough surface, right? You're never going to have a smooth surface to skateboard on, unless you find an old pool.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what pools are for.
I guess, unless they decide that, hey, we can put these in pool surfaces as well. They can do pool surrounds, I know. The deck around pools. So, well, who knows?
I think that we'll find out pretty soon, because, again, having received this massive amount of funding, which don't even get me started on the viral nature of what I would call clicktivism. Mm. Activism by clicking on something.
Clicktivism, that's a nice term. Good term.
The idea here has fantastic potential. I think that a lot of the backlash against it and a lot of the skepticism and hole poking comes just because people have universally acclaimed this very quickly without checking. But now that they have millions of dollars, Scott, they're planning to hire 6 engineers to scale up their production. Their big point right now is that they don't want to hand make all these panels.
Ah, Ben, and here it is. I got to just point this out. Here it is, 4 years after they started this whole thing, or maybe even a little more. I think the idea started around 2006 to begin with. The initial idea.
The inception. Yeah.
Here we are in 2014, and you and I just talked about it for about 50 minutes. TechStuff did a program on it that I don't know how long that one lasted. There's videos online that, sure. People are still donating to this. I mean,
Absolutely. It's
getting attention. It's out there, and there's plenty of, there's plenty of attention to this right now. So who knows? Maybe this is going to develop into something that's really feasible. And some of the applications that we talked about, the parking lots, the sidewalks, the neighborhood streets, maybe things like that will start to creep into, into our infrastructure and begin to, spread to the point where maybe someday we will consider putting them in for, some of the smaller roads. Maybe not the massive superhighways that we have right now.
Right.
But who knows? Maybe someday. I can't see it happening right now anytime soon. That's all.
And what about you, listeners? Ladies and gentlemen, let us know what you think about solar roadways. Are they the pavement of the future, or is this some more vaporware? We have a lot of other episodes that kind of touch on similar things, like the Could I Build a Interstate Around the World and solar powered cars. So do check those out. You can find them all on our website, carstuffshow.com. Scott and I are actually on the internet as well. Surprise, surprise.
That's right.
We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and you can always send us an email directly. Remember, our email address has changed. Now we are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.